Hello and welcome to the Outpost Frequencies podcast with me, not George Lucas, brought to you by thelastmovieoutpost.com for all of your movie news, reviews and everything cool about films. Let's get on with it. I should probably pick a better catchphrase than that, maybe something from a film. Here we go.
It's alive!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass.
Why so serious?
You never know what you're gonna get.
I drink your milkshake.
I don't want to sound lazy, but I've had an incredibly busy couple of weeks, and illness has hit me as well, which is one of those horrible things. But it, you know, what are you going to do? But yeah, I've had a very busy week, so I wasn't here last week, so I apologize for that. But I'm back again with all the movies that I've seen, which, because I wasn't here last week, is now loads. There's at least 32 we got to get through, so let's crack on. We're starting off with last night. I saw No Time to Die, and I still actually think it was quite a decent Bond. But after that, I watched The Punisher from 1998. Now, this is the Dolph Lundgren version. Sean, one of the other contributors from The Last Movie Outpost, said it was a good version of The Punisher. Now, as you know, if you listen to this, I never read the books, never read the comics. I didn't know anything about The Punisher. I've seen the Marvel series, and I've seen the one with Thomas Jane and John Travolta. John Travolta's always a sign it's going to be a bad movie. Sean told me that this Punisher from 1988 was the best version, so I thought I'd watch it. It was all right. Very 80s in the way it was done. I can't say it was massively blown away or anything new or anything that good about it. It was okay. Lewis Gossett Jr. plays a cop, and he cares for the cop at the end, which I thought was a bit weird because I didn't think he cared about anybody. It was all right for an 80s movie. Like I say, I'm sure if you love The Punisher, you loved it, but because I didn't know anything about The Punisher, wasn't bothered. That was The Punisher of 1989. Continuing with my westerns, Old Yeller from 1957. Now, I have never seen this, but I know what it's about. A teenage boy grows to love a stray yellow dog while helping his mother and young brother run their Texas homestead while their father is away on a cattle drive. First thought to be a good-for-nothing mutt, Old Yeller soon becomes beloved by all. Now, let's say I know the story of this, and if you don't know the story of this, I'm not going to say spoilers, it's from like 1957. I know the dog gets shot at the end. Now, when I started watching this, it did remind me of, what's that one, Marley and Me? Now, in Marley and Me, I was glad the dog died. I know everybody says that's like a horrible thing to say. That dog was a pain in the arse. Nothing but a pain in the arse. So when it died at the end, I wasn't sad. I was happy for the family. In Old Yeller, it does start off the same way. The dog causes loads of problems. And I kept thinking, right, if the dog carries on like this, I'll shoot it. But the dog actually turns out to be really nice and really friendly and really lovely and helps one of the young lads. He gets attacked by wild boar and the dog saves him and everything else. But then the dog ends up with rabies, and so he's got to shoot it. And I will not lie to you, I may have shed a single tear because it was quite sad at the end. It was a good story, though, because, let's say, Marley and Me, I don't ever see the dog as a good thing in Marley and Me. It was horrible. In Old Yeller, the dog was actually a good and useful dog. And he was a good boy. He didn't eat all the food and stuff that, I can't remember what the kid's name was in it now. I want to say Brent. I watched it a while ago. It was a very good movie, though, and I'm glad I watched it. And that's Old Yeller from 1957. Again, continuing with more westerns, a bit more modern, Maverick from 1994. By the late, great Richard Donner, with Mel Gibson, Jodie Foster, James Garner. This was based, as I remember, on the TV series of Maverick, or an earlier version of Maverick, with James Garner, as I recall. If I'm wrong, I apologise. But this was just a great, fun movie. He's trying to get money together to play a massive tournament poker, but everybody's out to con each other. And it's just funny. Jodie Foster's great. The whole cast is great. I say what you will about Mel. I like Mel. He puts in a good performance. And Richard Donner was having fun with this film. It wasn't so serious like Lethal Weapon or covering something huge like Superman. But Maverick was just good fun. And I enjoyed it. And you never know who to trust. I love it when he goes off with the Indians, which is quite funny. Yeah, like I say, Maverick is, you've probably seen it. It's from 1994. It's a Western based around a poker tournament and everybody trying to con each other out of their money and stuff. And it has got a very satisfying ending to it. I really liked Maverick, 1994. Now, again, continuing with Westerns. There's a lot of Westerns this time around. High Noon, 1952. Gary Cooper, Grace Kelly, Thomas Mitchell, Lloyd Bridges. I think I have seen this in the past. I don't really recall. I do remember my dad liking it. My dad was quite into Westerns. It's funny, I didn't pick up on them, but Dad did like Westerns, so he kept going on about them. This one I've heard of. Basically, there's a naughty person is going to turn up to kill Gary Cooper or Marshal Will Kane because he sent him to jail. And it was quite good. There was a good group dynamic of everything, that some people wanted to help Gary Cooper, but others realised that they were putting their own lives on the line and sort of, do you help out a friend and this kind of thing? And it was very good. I hadn't seen it before, and so I quite enjoyed it. The only thing, this is a really horrible thing to say. I say that every week. Grace Kelly is beautiful. Stunningly beautiful. Now, the other lady that they had in there, Katie Gerardo, I think she's called, or Gerardo, it's silent H, silent J. She was minging. She was so ugly. And I kept thinking, I think she was married to Lloyd Bridges, I think. And I just kept thinking, why did they cast her? She's got that resting bitch face where she just looks miserable if she's not smiling. It was weird casting. I don't know why that stuck out to me. But Lloyd Bridges was in it, which was weird because I watched him in Hot Shots the other day, where obviously he's being hilariously funny. And he was, you know, he's a very good actor. And overall, like I say, I did like High Noon. I don't think it's a film I'd return to, but I did enjoy it. It was High Noon of 1952. Coming a bit more modern now. Somebody had mentioned Caveat of 2020, a Shudder production. Now, first of all, I will start off by saying I have an issue with Shudder. I am not a fan of their work. In fact, I have seen several Shudder productions. Off the top of my head, I can't remember what they are. I did watch one about a cinema, which I had to turn off because it was just awful. It was awful. I never turn movies off, but I do remember this one. And this Caveat was produced by Shudder. And as soon as Shudder comes up on the screen, I know, you know, I am a big horror fan and I know it's a horror channel, but I just think their productions are just bad. This actually started off quite well and the production value was really good. And I thought, okay, no, we'll give this a go. The story is a lone drifter suffering from a partial memory loss accepts a job to look after a psychologically troubled woman in an abandoned house on an isolated island. Sounded all right. Looked quite creepy. I'll give it a go. The caveat of the movie was, he gets to this house with this bloke. He has to agree to be chained up to the basement, but so he can only walk around certain parts of the house with like a full leather jacket, almost like a straight jacket, but his arms are free. And I thought to myself, I'm sorry, that is the stupidest thing I have ever seen. Well, not stupidest, but I mean, it was utterly ridiculous premise to the film. So my brain kind of shut down from there. The rest of the film is not bad. It kind of plays out quite well. The production is quite good and the cast are quite good, but just the whole chain, nobody would agree to that. Can you go to a creepy old house in the middle of nowhere? You don't mind wearing a chain. You can't even reach the toilet, so you're gonna have to pee and poo outside in the garden. It was a shame because a better story would have made a really decent movie to this, but this just, it didn't work on any level. It was a stupid twist to put in this movie. So that was a shame. The rest of it was, you might like it and think, oh, I completely understand why he's chained to the basement. I didn't. Like I say, my brain checked out. But that was Caveat of 2020. Going old school again with the westerns, The Magnificent Seven, 1960. Starring every western star in the entire world, I think. Yul Brynner, Steve McQueen, Charles Bronson, Eli Walsh. This, to me, I mean, obviously it's a remake of The Magnificent Seven, but whenever I think of The Magnificent Seven, I also think of The Three Amigos, because it's the same story, but with songs. seven gunfighters are hired by Mexican peasants to liberate their village from oppressive bandits. You know the story of this. They did a remake in recently with, what's his name? Oh, I can see his face. Denzel Washington. Bloody idiot. Denzel Washington and Chris Pratt. The remake, don't remember a thing about it. The original Magnificent Seven is very, very good. The only thing I would say about this was, it was a great movie. I loved how halfway through they did actually leave the village, but then they realised the error of their ways. And I like the line by Yul Brynner where he says, "I've been offered a lot for my services, but never everything." Because the villagers offer him everything that they've got to help them out. The only thing I didn't like about this movie was, and don't hate me when I say this, but the music. Because it was done by Elmer Bernstein. Elmer Bernstein had worked with John Sturges also on The Great Escape. Now, I love The Great Escape. It's one of my all-time favourites. I kind of almost know it word perfect, even the German lines. I love The Great Escape. But watching The Magnificent Seven again, which I'm not so familiar with, the music is incredibly The Great Escape, pretty much all the way through. It was, you know, there are real moments where you can hear that same tone. I once spoke to a friend of mine who was studying music in college, and I said about John Williams, and he said, "Oh, his stuff's a bit too samey." And I remember standing up for John Williams. How dare you say that his music is a bit the samey? But I do understand it now, because there are times when you can hear certain beats of music and certain tones of music, and you think to yourself, "Oh, that's very much like that from that same person." And the Magnificent Seven music is very, very similar to The Great Escape, and that was the only letdown for me. The rest of the film was fantastic. The rest of the film is really, really good. You know, it's The Magnificent Seven. I need to sit down and watch The Seven Samurai again at some point in time, because I haven't seen that for a long time. But yeah, The Magnificent Seven, 1960, great film. More westerns. Silverado of 1985. It's not that old. Now, this was directed by Lawrence Kasdan, which was kind of, oh, okay, I didn't realise that. Kevin Kline, Scott Glenn, Kevin Costner, Danny Glover, loads of people. The other, I think, problem with this casting was, excuse my email, the other problem with this casting was John Cleese. Now, don't get me wrong, I love John Cleese. He is a comedy legend, but I did find he was playing Basil Fawlty in this movie a bit. It was like, right, and it just the way he played it and everything else, it was a bit weird. So John, I kind of don't understand why they cast him, really. He was very good in, I mean, it was a terrible movie, but The Day the Earth Stood Still with Keanu Reeves, he was very good in that when he played it straight. But in this, he kind of played it straight, but then that tongue-in-cheek, and it was not great casting. Overall, Silverado, I didn't think was all that good. A misfit bunch of friends comes together to right the injustices of an existing small town. And that was kind of, I didn't really get that much of the story about it. Scott Glenn ends up with Kevin Kline, and then they rescue Kevin Costner, who's in jail, and then Brian Dennehy's the bad guy. And it was just, it wasn't a story that captured me all that well. I have seen it before. I do remember watching it, but this time round, didn't enjoy it as much, sorry to say. But that's Silverado of 1985. Coming up to more modern times. Red Notice, 2021. Starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Ryan Deadpool Reynolds, and Gal Gadot. I thought I would give this a try. I mean, I do like The Rock. He doesn't go by The Rock now. It's now Dwayne Johnson. But I like him. Some of his earlier stuff has been quite good, because he's always kept himself quite tongue-in-cheek. This is another tongue-in-cheek film. The only problem with this movie is it was an original IP. An Interpol agent tracks down the world's most wanted art thief. It was, the main problem was, stupidly, the cast. Because I think I said in my review, if you read it, and I said it on Twitter as well, that that Dwayne Johnson plays The Rock, Ryan Reynolds plays Deadpool, and Gal Gadot plays whoever she plays in any of her movies. You know, the hot blonde, the hot, not blonde, hot brunette, leggy woman. That's it. And that was kind of it. Ryan Reynolds all the way through is making quips like Deadpool. If I was going to watch a Ryan Reynolds movie with quips, I'll just watch Deadpool again. I mean, the story in this was all right, and it kind of finished fairly well. It did go a bit Indiana Jones, which Ryan Reynolds makes a joke about and stuff. The two of the things that annoyed me about this was, one, the green screen. Goodness me, there was so much CG in it. I don't think any of the actors left a studio, from what I could see. It was very green screen. There was a whole scene at the end where they end up in a pool, and it's obviously a set. You know, it's obviously a set. They didn't go to some exotic place to film it. And what was the other thing that annoyed me about it? Oh, that's right. Mild spoilers in this. There's a bit where we see what happens whilst Ryan Reynolds is getting arrested. But then later on in the movie, there's a flashback to what actually happens. And I'm thinking, no. We saw what happens. You can't then change the facts and details. It didn't make any sense. It was a weak-ass story. Like I say, if you like The Rock and you like Gal Gadot and you like Ryan Reynolds, you'll probably enjoy it. But overall, it was not very good. It was a below average action movie. Apparently it's number one on Netflix. Well, of course it bloody well is. You know, just because it's popular doesn't mean it's good. It's Red Notice, 2021. Now, old school sci-fi. The Final Countdown, 1980, starring Kurt Douglas, Martin Sheen, Catherine Ross and James Farentino. It's weird seeing James Farentino again. I know him. This is really weird. I know him as, I think he played Simon Peter in Jesus of Nazareth, because my dad used to watch that a lot. And I couldn't place him at first. And I go, where do I know that guy from? Until I looked him up and I realised who he was. That's beside the point. The Final Countdown. A modern war aircraft carrier is thrown back to the time in 1941 near Hawaii, just a few hours before the Japanese attack Pearl Harbor. Now, this was a really interesting concept because, I mean, I don't know exactly the details of Pearl Harbor. I know a bit about American history, but I obviously know what happened at Pearl Harbor and the devastation that it caused. So what would happen if a modern warship went back to literally sort of the day or two before? They knew what was going to happen. With all of their modern technology and radar and guided missiles and all that kind of stuff, they could stop Pearl Harbor happening. But then conversely, if you have the power to do that, do you do that? Because obviously Pearl Harbor is still a part of American history, and you have to learn from history, you have to learn from the mistakes, you have to learn from the bad times. You can't just have good times all the time. Would it change America that much? It was really interesting. It was really, really well done. It was the first viewing for me. I'd never seen it before, but I really, really liked it. That was The Final Countdown of 1980. I won't spoil it in case you haven't seen it, but it's, if you like time travel, which is done quite well, I thought, it's not overly explained, which was quite good. Brilliant cast. All of them were really, really good. And just the whole film, like I say, is a very clever story and it's concluded very well as well, I thought. It was really well done. Yeah, that's The Final Countdown of 1980. Oh my goodness, right. I watched Home Sweet Home Alone, the new 2021 version. Oh my goodness me, this was beyond bad that you could imagine. This was absolutely terrible, terrible movie. I love Home Alone, the original. It's not a perfect movie. What's his name? Kevin. Macaulay Culkin is not amazing in it. He's good and entertainable and watchable, but I mean overall the movie is certainly flawed, but it's a good fun movie. The Wet Bandits get it, you know, they get paint cans in the face and burn their head and all this kind of stuff. It's good fun. You actually feel for Kevin. This new version is just, it's terrible. The first thing that got me about this was it stars Aisling B. Now, she is quite big in Britain. She's a British or an Irish comedian. The first thing that got me angry about this was they cast her as the mum of the kid who's going to be left home alone. She has the most gorgeous Irish accent. It is so nice. When she talks, it's just lovely to listen to. So what do they do in this movie? They make her English. And it was just, right, no. If you're going to cast somebody like Aisling B in a movie like this, give her her accent. Her accent is beautiful. That's what makes her great. Well, not makes her great, but I mean, you know, it's one of the things about her that's fantastic. And then they make her English. Just cast an English person, or if not, just cast an American person, because it was an American movie. There was no reason for her to be English. Not that that was a bad thing. You know, I'm English, and I'm okay, right? This film was just so bad. The young kid in it is the young kid who was in Jojo Rabbit, and he was quite funny in Jojo Rabbit when he had a decent director, because I like Takiki Watakaki Titi, whatever his name is. I like him. I think he's a good director, and I like his work. This, the kid was just, it was awful. Don't watch it. Just don't watch it. Don't encourage them because they might make another one. There was nothing redeeming about this. I read somewhere that Rob Delaney sort of said, oh, it's a nice new original fresh script and everything else. And it was. Basically, Rob Delaney is in financial trouble. It turns out he's got a doll which is worth thousands of dollars, but he thinks the kid has stolen it, so he's going to break into the kid's house to steal it back. You know, the Wet Bandits were criminals, and Kevin was in danger, whereas this, there was no danger, there was no threat, so there were, you know, the kid wasn't really in any danger at all. He thought that they were coming to kidnap him to sell him to some old woman or something like that. This could have all been the whole movie could have been avoided if they just knocked on the door saying, have you got my doll? The end. You know, that's it. This, honestly, just don't watch this. It was terrible. It was terrible. I've seen some stinkers in my time. This year, I think one of the stinkers that stuck out to me was, I think I compared this to Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. Home Alone, this new Home Alone makes that look like Ben-Hur. I mean, oh dear, yeah. Home Sweet Home Alone 2021, avoid at all costs. Let's go on to something a bit better now. The Shootist with John Wayne. I was going to do an impression of John Wayne then. I didn't know where I was going with it. That was weird. 1976, directed by Don Siegel. A dying gunfighter spends his last days looking for a way to die with the minimum of pain and the maximum of dignity. Starred Ron Howard in it, who I put up a tweet saying I was watching it and he liked it. So me and Ron Howard are very good friends now because he liked one of my tweets. No, this was very good. I'm not a massive John Wayne fan. I have seen his movies in the past, and I always think John Wayne kind of plays John Wayne in all of his movies. This was really, really good though. I really did like it. He's basically got cancer, but he's a very famous gunman. And of course, people want to kill him, but he doesn't want to go out like that. He wants to go out with a bit of dignity. The only letdown I had in the film was the blood, because there's obviously shootings. It's a Western. The blood was paint, and it was a real shame that that happened, because, again, it could have been a really, you know, it could have really added to the movie if they just spent a little bit on the special effects and they just overdid the blood a bit. But overall, the film was I thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't know if I'd watch it again, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. But that was The Shootist of 1976. Coming up to modern again, I've had a right old back and forth. Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, 2021, came on streaming, so I thought I'd give it a try. I missed it at the cinema. Drunken Yoda on thelastmovieoutpost.com gave this a pretty good rating. Now, I was mixed about this. First of all, I thought the story was quite good. How this guy's got these 10 rings. He's immortal. He can do pretty much anything without getting hurt. But then he loses his wife. And so to a gang kill his wife. But then he thinks his wife is trapped behind a sort of a barrier, which is a portal to heaven, hell, purgatory, whatever. And so he's trying to get through to it. And then it's his son and daughter who are trying to stop him. It was, like I say, the story was quite decent. It was nice to have a story of a bad guy who wasn't out for world domination, you know, and I'm going to blow up the earth and all this kind of stuff. He just wanted to get his wife back. That was quite nice. The problem with the film was, I had several issues. Awkwafina, how is she working in movies? She's not funny. She's not clever. She's not anything. What really annoyed me about this was, mild spoiler, at the end of it, they go to this CG place. I'm going to come on to CG in a minute, but they go to this CG place and she picks up a bow and arrow. And you know, as soon as she does that, that she's going to fire the shot that saves the day. And guess what? That's exactly what happens. There was absolutely zero reason for her to be in about 90% of this movie. At the beginning, when he's in America, get it, but she didn't have to go to China with him. So she was a major problem. The CG was a major issue for me. I was raised on the early Jackie Chan movies, Drunken Master and the Snake and the Eagle's Shadow and that kind of thing. I love those very well done, directed, rehearsed fight sequences. Now in this, the fight sequences were very, very good and the actors were spot on. However, the direction really let them down. The CG, the over-the-top and everything else, the whole fight on the bamboo scaffolding outside the building was just stupid. And it just, and like I say, the whole third act, the only thing that was real in that were the actors and their clothes they were wearing. Everything else was CG and you could see it a mile off. And it really took me out of the film and it was a shame. I was quite looking forward to it. In this day of CG, you can have CG, which is perfect. And you don't even notice it. And then there are other times when you really do notice it. And the big dragons and everything else that were battling at the end. Just, I wasn't a fan of this, unfortunately. You might like it. It's another Marvel movie. You know, Marvel's Marvel, isn't it? But yeah, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, 2021. Not a massive fan. More up-to-date movie, 3:10 to Yuma. Now, this was the 2007 version, which, because this was a remake, and I don't remember who was in the original, but this was Russell Crowe and Christian Bale and Ben Foster. And it was directed by James Mangold. Now, I'd like James Mangold, apart from the little freaks out he has on Twitter every now and then. I'm kind of intrigued about what's going to happen with Indiana Jones 5, because he's directing that at the moment. I like him. But anyway, 3:10 to Yuma. A small-time rancher agrees to hold captured outlaw who's awaiting a train to take him to court in Yuma. The battle of wheels and shoes and the outlaws try to psych out the rancher. This was quite well done as a Western. Basically, like I say, Christian Bale's a rancher. He's not got much or anything else. But and Russell Crowe is a awful outlaw. Terrible, terrible man. Quite happy to kill anybody. But he gets captured. And so Christian Bale is offered a reward to take him, to get him on this train. It was quite good. I thought the third act let it down a little bit because Russell Crowe's gang turns up. Ben Foster in this was really good. He was a really, really nasty piece of work. He would have shot a kid in the face if you paid him enough money, I reckon. Not the actor, obviously. I'm not talking an Alec Baldwin thing here, but just, you know, the character that Ben Foster was playing, he was very good. It was a very good film, but the third act kind of just let it down a bit. And then it got a bit sappy, which I didn't like either. It just, I don't know how I would have played the story out. Probably quite dark. it was a good film, and you might like the ending. I just remember the ending for me being a little bit, which was a bit of a shame. But that was the 3:10 to Yuma, the 2007 version. Right, 80s horror schlock, The Lamp. 1978. A group of high schoolers decide to stay in a natural history museum after closing hours. Exciting stuff already. A newly acquired and mysterious lamp hiding a deadly force will turn the fun into horror. This was a genie in a bottle story, basically. There was boobage to introduce it. The rest of the film was completely predictable. The actual genie at the end was laughable. I mean, okay, it's 1987, but the special effects were bad. It was not good. It was directed, made me laugh actually, it's directed by Tom Daley, which is weird because he's now an Olympic diver. And I thought, I don't think he was born in 1987, but obviously it's a different Tom Daley. But yeah, this was an 80s schlock thing. Don't know why I watched it. It wasn't anything outstanding. It was kind of, it was all right. There's not much else to say about that, really. If you like the 80s schlock horror thing with lots of killings and a bit of boob, you'll have a good time with it. That's The Lamb of 1987. Wyatt Earp of 1994. Now, this was around the same time that Tombstone came out. Now, I watched Tombstone quite recently, and I thoroughly enjoyed Tombstone. That's where Kurt Russell plays Wyatt Earp. This one is, funny enough, directed by Lawrence Kasdan again, obviously a fan of his westerns, but this is Kevin Costner as Wyatt Earp. It stars Dennis Quaid, Gene Hackman. It was a very, very good cast. The problem with this movie was it was far too long. Far too long. It starts off with Wyatt Earp, I'm pretty sure, a sperm. No, it didn't go back that early. It had him started out as a young lad, and it kind of told his life of how he went through the whole Dodge City, OK Corral, blah, 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 and up to Tombstone, and sort of followed him throughout his entire life. It was 3 hours. It was just over 3 hours. And it was, like I say, for me, it was too long. I think I probably would have enjoyed this more if I hadn't seen Tombstone, because I think Tombstone is the better version, because it's just shorter and it's just more compact. And Doc Holliday, played by Val Kilmer in Tombstone, I thought was better than the Dennis Quaid Doc Holliday. No offence against Dennis. I like him. Generally turns in a good performance and stuff. But if you have to compare these two movies because they are so incredibly similar. I was more of a fan of Tombstone than I was a Wyatt Earp. But I get the impression that Wyatt Earp is more historically accurate. I mean, you know, it's a Hollywood film, so goodness knows what that means. But Wyatt Earp, 1994, pretty good, but I would recommend Tombstone. Outland, 1981. Peter Hames, starring Sean Connery. Oh, excuse me, pardon me. Little burp. I think I have seen this before. A federal marshal stationed on a mining colony on Jupiter's moon of Io uncovers a drug smuggling conspiracy. Pardon me. Just because I've had breakfast, I'm so sorry. He gets no help from the workers or authorities and finds himself marked for murder. This was quite good. This was kind of a Western in space, if you like. I think that's probably why I watched it. It was very, very good. It was very well done. Obviously very influenced by Alien in the style that it was shot, the spaceships, the set production, everything else. But overall, a really decent movie. Again, you've probably seen Outland. If you haven't, it's worth looking up. It's got Sean Connery in it. Now, I know Sean Connery at the end of his career had some stinkers, like The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and he did the Avengers, not Marvel Avengers, but the TV Avengers film, which was both pretty bloody awful. But this was one of Sean Connery's better roles, and it was good because I didn't feel he was playing James Bond in this either. Obviously, you know, he's, I don't want to say he's typecast to James Bond, but he was very, very good in this. Decent film. That's all I'm going to say about that. A decent film. Outland, 1981. More modern again. And I know I said I was through with horrors, but The Deep House of 2021. Now, a young A modern couple go to France to explore an underwater house and share the findings on social media, but undergo a serious change of plans when the couple enters the interior of the house. The premise of this, already I thought to myself, an underwater haunted house movie. That's the hook. The hook is it's underwater. What the hook meant was everything moved in slow motion. So instead of a normal haunted house where you're walking around and you walk from one room to the other, it goes very slowly underwater because you have to swim slowly underwater. I reckon if this was just a haunted house movie with the same story, it would have been about 20 minutes long. But instead it was an hour and a half or 85 minutes. It was, some of it was quite creepy. Some of it was quite well done. The overall payoff to the story was incredibly weak, I felt. at the end, which was a shame because I'd invested so much time in it. And the characters were actually sort of, you know, well, let's correct this. The girl was quite good. The guy was wooden. In fact, how they got him underwater without him floating to the surface because he was so wooden was amazing. I mean, he literally narrates the film and his whole demeanor is monotone. It was pretty bad. James Jagger? I wonder if there's any relation to Mick Jagger. I didn't look that up. He was dull in this. Apart from, I'm going to spoil this a little bit, he gets possessed or bitten or whatever it is at the end of it, and then he suddenly changes and she doesn't even notice. And it's kind of like, seriously, this guy's acting is so unbelievably wooden that even if he like smiled, it would have changed the dynamic of him. It was not a very good film. It was, like I say, it was well made, but it was just badly written and badly cast. Like I say, the guy in it was just, he was dull as dishwater all the way through. The girl was quite nice, but, you know, that's not enough strong enough hook to get me through a film. And just the whole hook of an underwater house that's haunted. The payoff to the story, not worth the effort. The Deep House, 2021, that was. Going old school again. I am going back and forth, aren't I? The Professionals, 1966, another Western. An arrogant Texan millionaire hires four adventurers to rescue his kidnapped wife from a notorious Mexican bandit. This was really good. This was really good. Burt Lancaster, Lee Marvin, Robert Ryan, Woody Strode. It was minimal cast. I mean, there was a really good cast in this. But yeah, they travel through the Mexican border and down into Mexico to rescue this millionaire's wife. Good story. Good hook. I'm not going to spoil anything. Good the way it was played out, that the first two acts are the rescue, but then the third act is getting back across Mexico, being chased by these Mexicans and stuff. It was really, really good Western. I stand corrected. I have said for a long time, Westerns are all rubbish and boring. And I stand fully corrected that there are some Westerns out there which are fantastic. I've still got some more to watch, but The Professionals of 1966 was a really good one. I'm not going to say too much more about it because, A, you've probably seen it. But if you haven't and you want to see a decent action movie, it's a little bit dated, obviously, because of, you know, when it was made in 66, it's a little bit dated. But overall, it was really, really good. That's The Professionals of 1966. More fun and games. True Lies, 1994. Directed by James Cameron, starring Arnie and Jamie Lee Curtis and Tom Arnold and the late Bill Paxton. I'm taking it you've seen this movie. A fearless globe-trotting terrorist battling secret agent has his life turned upside down when he discovers his wife might be having an affair with a used car salesman while terrorists smuggle nuclear warheads into the United States. This is apparently a remake of a French film, but what this film was is fun. Okay, nobody is taking it seriously. Everybody's having fun. It's stupid in places. When she drops the Uzi and it just goes off and everything else. I think that's why I watched it, because we talked about it on that on the live stream, the Outpost Frequencies live stream for Last Movie Outpost the other Sunday. But it's just fun. Everybody's having fun. And that's fine. You're allowed to do stupid movies like this where you're having fun. And James Cameron is a good director. Say what you will about him with his movies and everything else and whatnot. It was, like I say, I loved this film. It was great. It was stupid. It was over the top. I love the fact that Arnold Schwarzenegger is apparently a salesman somewhere, but he looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger, but he's actually an international terrorist. Secret agent, sorry, battling terrorists, I should say. And so, he's going away, and then he comes home to his wife and sort of saying, oh, the computer convention was pretty good. They've got a new mouse out and all this kind of stuff. And she has no idea. And the way it's played out actually with him and Jamie Lee Curtis, and then Jamie Lee Curtis is possibly going to have an affair, and the guy she's going to have an affair with, Bill Paxton, is pretending he's a secret agent. It was very, very clever story, very well told, and it's just loads of fun. You can't, you know, you go into a film like this and you can just sit there with a few beers and a pizza and laugh and enjoy it. It was great. True Lies, 1994. Bit more serious now. Bruised, 2020, directed by Halle Berry and starring her, A disgraced MMA fighter finds redemption in the cage as she... pardon me. And the courage to face her demons when the son she had given up on as an infant unexpectedly returns into her life. I wasn't really in the mood for this. It was far too gritty. You know, I don't get me wrong, gritty films are good. I don't mind gritty films. And Halle Berry in this is fantastic. How she looks so good. You know, she's, what, 50-odd now? She looks amazing. She is stunningly beautiful. In this, she does get the crap kicked out of her quite a lot. But I wasn't in the mood for this. And so, I don't want to say I gave up on it. That's not the thing. But I just kind of lost interest in the story. If I'd watched this in a better mood, I probably would have enjoyed it an awful lot more. But unfortunately, I didn't. And so, yeah, that's bad. I'm sure, like I say, you might watch it. You've just got to be in the mood for that kind of movie. See, in between... So I watched True Lies, then Bruised, and then I watched Short Circuit, 1986. So it was kind of, you know, it was like a comedy sandwich filled with hard, brooding, punching women. So yeah, Bruised of 2020, not a massive fan of. Short Circuit, 1986 though, I'm a big fan of. My favourite thing about this film is Fisher Stevens. If you know the movie, you'll know why. Number five comes alive. This little robot, who's a military battle robot, gets struck by lightning and he comes alive and gains. He becomes a sentient being and he learns that if he gets disassembled, he'll die. And Ali Sheedy helps him along the way and stuff. But Fisher Stevens in this basically plays an Indian fella who they blacked up, I think is the right expression. No, I never had a problem with this when I was a kid. Never. I've seen Short Circuit hundreds of times. Never had an issue. Nowadays, in this PC world in which we live, you cannot have a white actor playing an Indian person. It's offensive. It's horrible. It's discriminatory. It's racist. It's offensive. No, it wasn't. It was funny. Fisher Stevens was actually really funny in this. He keeps getting expressions wrong. Like, they're going to leave the computer hub where they live, him and Steve Guttenberg, and he says... I was going to do the accent then, but I'm not going to do it because in this day and age, I'm going to get told off. But he says, oh, it's time for you to leave this place and spread your legs. No, the expression is spread your wings. Oh, right, spread your wings then. And it was funny. Fisher Stevens was really good in this. I mean, like I said, why they cast him, I don't know. I mean, if you're just going to get an Indian guy, just get an Indian guy. It's very, very strange. But it's number five. Number five comes alive. You know the story. It was. I still really enjoyed it. Austin Pendleton was very good in it as well. I think it's actually probably one of his best roles. I think somebody else said that on Twitter. But yeah, Short Circuit, 1986, great fun. Now, I haven't seen this too many times, but it's Star Wars Episode V, whatever that is, The Empire Strikes Back. I think this was Sunday afternoon. I had a load of editing to do. And so I put on a comfort watch. Let's call it that. Just to be on in the background. So I just watched Empire Strikes Back again. You can't fault this film. I mean, it's great. I have the despecialized fan edit 4K version of this because I refuse to watch the special editions on the Blu-ray and the DVD and everything else. Every other copy I've got of them here. I have got them on VHS somewhere. But I mean, it's Empire Strikes Back. It's great. Introduces Boba Fett. I love Boba Fett. Book of Boba Fett's coming out soon. I'm still not getting that excited about it, but, you know, I'm still going to watch it. But, yeah, it's Empire Strikes Back. You know, if you haven't seen it, seriously, why are you listening to me? This is all I talk about is science fiction and comedies and that kind of thing, okay? Empire Strikes Back is going to be on that list somewhere, okay? So, yeah, you know, if you're listening to this to get the latest... sort of heart-wrenching story about the struggle of a female TV person and blah, blah, blah. Nope, not going to happen. All right, we're going to be getting Star Wars and stuff. Yeah, Empire Strikes Back. You know, like I say, if you haven't seen it, then you're obviously a mental person. I shouldn't say things like that, should I? You're a person with learning disabilities. There we go. Peter Rabbit, 2018. This is on TV and I couldn't be bothered to change the channel. You know when when something's on and you can't be bothered to find the remote? And it's and so I actually watched all of it. It is all right. I like Domhnall Gleeson. And I like Rose Byrne, love Rose Byrne. She's lovely. But James Corden, oh dear. I, as a British person, I apologise for releasing James Corden to America and to movies. In Gavin and Stacey, he was quite funny. But that was kind of his, you know, that the role in that was kind of as far as he should have gone as an actor, stroke, loosely used term, comedian. I don't, I'm sick to death of James Corden now. So Peter Rabbit, going a bit old school again now. Be Kind Rewind, 2008. Two bumbling store clerks inadvertently erase footage from all of their VHS tapes at a video rental store. In order to keep the business running, they reshoot every film in the store with their own camera on a budget of $0. Now, I've seen this movie a few times before. I still love this movie. I dug it up. I don't know why I dug it up, but I just sort of dug it up because I just thought, oh, I fancy watching that again. I like Jack Black. I know he's kind of a bit Marmite, that, you know, some people think he's a bit too over the top and stuff. He's quite controlled in this, but him and what's his name, Mos Def, run this video store. Danny Glover runs the place, and basically they, Jack Black gets magnetized and he goes into the video store and erases all the videotapes, and so they remake things like Ghostbusters. And it's funny because, I mean, it's really, really well done. It's kind of one of those films that you watch and you think, oh, I wish I should do that. They call it Swedied. They Swede these movies. And so they make their own version. That's what it's called, a Swedied movie. And you do think, I'd love to make some Swedied movies. That'd be really funny. And like I say, they're Ghostbusters. Jack Black's holding up the box and he's singing the Ghostbusters theme tune. And it's something like, if you're walking down the street and there's something strange, who you gonna call? Ghostbusters. And Mos Def's going, what's that? And he's going, that's the theme tune. The thing, he's going, no, it's not. It sort of is, but isn't. It's a really funny film. They remake Rush Hour, and Jack Black Chinese himself up. Again, it is quite funny. There is a bit as well where they're gonna recreate the life of Fats Waller. And so Jack Black blacks himself up and walks into a room full of black people. It's funny because it's not being offensive. Jack just thinks he's the best person to play the character. Be Kind Rewind is a funny little movie. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. It's good fun. It's good fun. My favourite joke in there was, they keep bringing up a list of the movies that they've Swedied, like Driving Miss Daisy and I forget the others. But one of the movies that they say they Swed is Gummo. Now, if you don't know Gummo, it is... it really made me laugh. Gummo is a movie about middle America, trailer park people, killing cats. It's quite a disturbing movie, and for them to Swede it was actually quite funny. Like I say, if you know Gummo, you won't get that joke. If you look Gummo up and read it, you will laugh to yourself that they decided to remake it, because that was quite good. That was Be Kind Rewind, 2008. Now going on to one of probably the best action movies ever made, The Raid 2. This is 2014. This was the second one. I saw the first one earlier this year. Had the second one down on my list to watch. One night I thought I'd put it on. Not dubbed. Obviously watch it in the original with the subtitles and everything. The Raid 2000. These films are amazing. They're brutally violent, but the action is so good. And the story is good as well. Only a short time after the first raid. If you haven't seen the first raid, the raid is very much like the story of Dredd with Carl Urban. There is a tower block and it's run by criminals, and the police go in to take these criminals out. But then there are, what's the word, R? That's very very Somerset of me, isn't it? But then there are some coppers who are bent, and so they get, what's the word, traitored? What's the word I want? Ugh, stupid brain fart. Screwed over, basically. That was the first one. This is the second one. This is so weird because it's an Indonesian movie directed by a Welsh guy called Gareth Evans. Like, really random. But what Gareth does is direct action so well. So well. I love the Raid 2. It is one of the best action movies. I love Kung Fu movies and everything else. Both the Raid and Raid 2 are easily two of the best movies ever for action. They're fantastic. If you haven't seen them, you can get them dubbed if you're one of those people that can't read. but I highly recommend watching the original because it does lose a little bit in translation from when they dub it. The fight sequences though are just it's such a good movie. That's The Raid of 2014. Going old school again with the sci-fi. Again, to just one of the best movies ever made. Tron, 1982. Jeff Bridges. Bruce Boxlinter, is that? I don't know how to say that. David Warner. Cindy Morgan. A computer hacker is abducted into a digital world and forced to participate in gladiatorial games where his only chance of escape is the help of a heroic system security program. Tron's just great. Tron was one of those films where, when it came out, nobody was quite sure what was going to go on with it and everything else. But then it didn't change science fiction, I don't think, but it opened up this incredible world. And it was fantastic. It was never nominated for an Oscar because apparently they used computers to do the special effects. Nah. But Tron is great. Excuse me, pardon me. I love Tron. It's brilliant. Jeff Bridges is one of those actors that if Jeff Bridges is in a movie, you're in for a good time. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a bad movie with Jeff Bridges in. He's the dude. He's great. I will be watching Tron Legacy at some point. Now, I know people are mixed about Tron Legacy. I really liked it. I thought it took it in a good direction. It kept to the spirit of the whole thing. And what Tron Legacy does have is one of the best movie soundtracks of all time ever. Because I love Daft Punk. And the soundtrack to that film is incredible. So I will be watching Tron Legacy in an upcoming one. But Tron 2000 of 1982, awesome movie. Now, somebody mentioned to me Death to Smoochie of 2002. A kid's show, I'm laughing about this because it was quite good. A kid's show host, Rainbow Ralph, is fired in disgrace while his replacement, Sheldon Mopes, aka Smoochie the Rhino, replaces the rising star. Unfortunately for Sheldon, the business of kids television isn't all child's play. Now, I think we mentioned it on the live stream the other day, so I found a copy to watch. Very funny. Robin Williams, Ed Norton, and Danny DeVito, and it's directed by Danny DeVito. This was really, really funny. Robin Williams plays this, you know, hey kids, it's entertainment time, but he's like a kind of Krusty the Clown, whereas off camera he gets caught in a bust where he gets caught accepting money so that somebody's kid can sit in the front row of the show, and then he gets arrested for it and gets disgraced, and then he gets replaced by Ed Norton. And Ed Norton is a proper do-gooder. He's a vegetarian, he cares for the earth, and he thinks kids should not be eating sweets and, you know, and everything else. And he's completely kind of naive to the whole world that goes on, how TV executives will literally kill each other to get ahead. It was very funny. Only got a score of 38 on the IMDb, which is a shame, but it was very, very funny. And I did enjoy Death to Smoochie. It was good fun. Death to Smoochie, 2002. Coming up to horror, modern day now. Black Friday, 2021. Now, I saw this because it stars the awesome Bruce Campbell. I've got a signed photo of Bruce Campbell somewhere. I think from his clan club. It's probably signed by a assistant somewhere. But anyway, a group of toy store employees must protect each other from a horde of parasitic infected shoppers. Now, Black Friday is not really a big thing in the UK. You know, we're all quite civilised about it, and we don't fall into that whole thing of consumerism. Whereas in America, Black Friday, look, that TV's reduced by $2. It's a bargain. Just to offend everyone in America. But, I mean, I've seen the video footage of Americans fighting each other over, like, say, TVs, and because they think they're on offer and everything else. Everybody knows they're not, but it's like a thing now. But to make, like, a zombie movie around Black Friday is a good idea. And overall, I thought the film was really good. I found myself giggling quite a lot through it. There is a review on thelastmovieoutpost.com, so have a look on there. I really liked it. I thought it was quite good. Bruce said he was done playing Ash, and he doesn't play Ash in this. He plays a management guy who's into bow ties and cardigans and things. And it was just a fun movie. Everybody was having fun, from the special effects department to the cast. Evan Sauer was in it. Ivana Bacaru, who was the young girl from Pan's Labyrinth. I didn't realise until I looked her up. I really enjoyed Black Friday. It was a silly, stupid movie, but it was fun. It was kind of a homage to the 1980s horror schlock thing. And if you just want to have fun with a movie, I say zombie movie, they're not really zombies. But if you want to have fun, check it out. It was great. Black Friday 2021. Back to 1985 now with The Stuff. Now, this was weird. I think I've seen this before. A delicious, mysterious goo that oozes from the earth makes is marketed as the newest dessert sensation. But the tasty treat rots more than your teeth when zombie-like snackers only want to consume more of the strange substance at any cost. I read that badly. There's some stuff that they find oozing out of the earth. So what do? Package it up and sell it and call it The Stuff. Hey, I said the title. I don't know how to describe this. The story was really weird. It really just went downhill. There was no... The hook was this stuff. And that was kind of it. There was no hook to the story or anything else. And it ended just really weirdly. I was looking forward to an 80s schlock horror. And I got a schlock horror. But it's not one I'd watch again. It was one of those ones that just didn't work. It was kind of trying to, you know, be the thing, and it certainly wasn't the thing. It was almost the opposite of the thing. The thing is almost a perfect movie. This was just rubbish. That was 1985, The Stuff. Now, I have to mildly apologise for this one. I watched it because of the box cover. Sorceress of 1982, starring Lee and Lynette Harris as twins. A sword and sorcery story... of the cosmic struggle between white magic and black magic. The box cover has ladies in a state of undress. And I won't lie, that's why I watched it. Lee and Lynette Harris, the twins, are both gorgeous. Very much look like... I can't think of her name now. They do get into a state of undress at several moments throughout the film. That was the only good thing about the film. The rest of it was absolutely bloody awful. I'm not apologising. Did I watch it because there were boobs in it? Yes, I did. And that was the only reason. It was all right. It was an 80s sort, you know, it was a rip-off of Conan and everything else, but it was just badly done. The acting and everything else was just, it was not very done. And then they got these two. It was a shame, actually, because both Lee and Lynette didn't really do anything else. And they kind of brought them in, got them nude, filmed them, and then never did anything else. And I can kind of understand why. It was a weak ass movie. Awful special effects at the end. This is big battle. It was Sorceress 1982. If you'd like mild titillation, you might enjoy it. I didn't much. Okay, going a bit more modern now. King Richard 2021. Now, I'm okay with biopics, and I'm not into tennis at all or anything else. I obviously know who Serena and Venus Williams are. We have Wimbledon over here, and it's broadcast down your throat whether you like it or not. So I know who these people are. But this was about their dad making them into the world tennis champions they are today. It's actually quite good. I actually followed the story quite well. I mean, I don't believe any of the story. Apparently he shot a black kid to keep the girl safe. Don't believe that. The only thing I believe in this movie was Venus and Serena Williams play tennis and they have a father. That's as far as it goes. It was, like I say, it was quite good. Will Smith plays their dad, Richard. He was a bit of a, arsehole? Well, no, that's not fair. He wasn't an arsehole. He was a nice guy, and he wanted the best for them, and he made sure that if they were going to play tennis, they were also going to study their books and stuff. So he wanted the best for them. He wanted them to get out of Compton, which I, you know, again, from what I know of America, Compton's a very hard, difficult place to grow up in. And, you know, and he wanted them to do well. But just some of the decisions he was making against him and his family and everything else was just weird. But it's a good biopic. It's a good biopic. If you like that kind of thing, if you like tennis, it's probably a bit more of a thing. I'm like I say, I'm not a fan of tennis, but I actually found myself quite engrossed in the story. It was quite good. Like I say, not I believe any of it. Hollywood takes liberties with things, don't they? But yeah, King Richard of 2021, worth a watch if you're into that kind of thing. And then my last movie, I thought this was going to take longer than an hour, but my last movie that I watched last night, this was great. Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter from 2012. Now, I saw this when it first came out, and I remember liking it, but that's what kind of all I remember about it. Abraham Lincoln, the 16th president of the United States, discovers vampires are planning to take over the US. He makes it his mission to eliminate them. Obviously, well, I say this is a stupid story. It's not a stupid story. It's actually a very clever story. But they've taken history and then twisted it to their own means. This was really, really good, though. The action was really, really well done. It is a little bit dated, and some of the CG is not the best. It's done very much style in The Matrix. But it was just a fun movie. It was a fun vampire flick. Rufus Sewell plays the... Excuse me, he plays the bad guy, which is kind of annoying because it's kind of Rufus Sewell always plays the bad guy. But overall, this was stupidly good fun. You've probably seen it. If you haven't, do you know what? It's worth a revisit. I really liked it. I might even do a retro review for the site for Last Movie Outpost because I really enjoyed it. It slowed down a little bit in the middle where he became a politician. But then it had this wonderful crescendo at the end with the train on the train. And the bridges on fire and everything. And it was one of those films I thoroughly enjoyed. Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter of 2012. It was great. And that's me done. I thought I was going to be longer than that. Because there were so many films to get through. But talking like this actually dries my throat out. That's why I'm coughing. Can't you feel the pain and struggle I go through for this podcast and for the last movie at post.com? That's been it for the week. I've got nothing else to talk about at the moment, but what I am going to do is, if there is anything you would like me to talk about, please contact me at notgeorgelucas1@gmail.com, or you can get me on Twitter at notgeorgelucas1. Ask me some questions. You know, what do you think is the best film of this year? What's the worst film of this year? I can answer the worst film this year. It's easily Home Alone. It was bloody awful. But no, ask me some questions and maybe some stuff that you might want to, excuse me, listen to. Other than that, please go to thelastmovieoutpost.com. It's a fantastic site. There is always news, reviews and other everything cool about film. We always update it every day with news, tidbits and everything else that we find. So anything that you want to talk about in the way of movies, you can. There's great talk back and there's a good community there. Quite a good, respectful community of everybody's opinions and things. And they're pretty funny as well, some of the guys on there. So it's definitely worth checking out, thelastmovieoutpost.com. Like I say, you can email me at notgeorgelucas1@gmail.com, or you can get me on Twitter at notgeorgelucas1. But other than that, have a good one, and make sure you watch some great movies.
I do wish we could chat longer.
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
I will have my vengeance. This life or the next.
To infinity and beyond!